The wait is over. It's Tuesday once again. Parish of the Patriots, number 306. Man, we're on a roll. We're having fun. I welcome all of you back. I know most of you are return listeners. I'm glad you keep coming back. If you are new, I hope you'll stick around for the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment. It's roughly the halfway point of the show. I do put it separate. So if that's absolutely not your thing, you don't have to listen to it. I encourage you to try it. I think you'll get something out of it, but it's up to you. And when I say halfway point, it's roughly. Sometimes we're way earlier, sometimes we're a little later, but I try to aim for that. But I encourage you to stick around one way or the other. Like I say, these other folks, they come back every week for a reason. I like to think it's because it's not horrible. So give it a chance. If you do get something out of the show, you know, dude, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It's very much appreciated. We have the one, they had the only. Anybody can figure it out. Snail mail is right here on the description page for the show, Radio Albion. It is much appreciated. Got the snail mail address there. Got email address there. Sometimes people drop me an email asking me, what up? You know, you doing all right? We doing all right. I mentioned this on the Friday show last week, and I just want to go ahead and mention it real quick here. I know I haven't done an update on Sven. And I mean, it's not because like I'm not keeping up. There's really nothing new to report. I don't have anything new there. He's still lumbering around and languishing in halfway house land. He's doing fine. I mean, he's doing well. All things considered. Nothing's really changed on that front. So I don't really, it's not that I'm not keeping up. It's not that I don't want to keep y'all in the loop. It's just that I don't have anything new to tell you. He's still basically in the same spot he was in, you know, a month ago. So better than being in prison. So, you know, and every day that goes by is a day closer to when he's not even on parole at all, you know, and, We all looking forward to that. Okay, let's see here. Listener supporter mailbag. That's what we're doing now. Tony, no note there, but I did want you to know I did get it. I appreciate it very much, Tony. Next up, Grandpa Dan, hope you're keeping well. And a belated congratulations on the recent 300 episode milestone. Please accept the enclosed Christmas dough for the show as a token of my appreciation. Thank you for being a voice of reason in such a crazy world we live in. I look forward to the show every single week. Keep preaching the good word of the Lord. And may we all feel his grace in these trying times. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, and may God bless. That's from Sam. I appreciate it a lot, Sam. I appreciate the kind words. It is crazy. And you know what? It is. It's important. How do I want to put this? It's important to unplug from the crazy, you know? The internet can be great. I mean, obviously, the show exists because of the internet. We can get information, but we also got to remember we can get exposed to too much crazy. You know, we unplug from the crazy. Unplug from the crazy. You know, we do this. We have these conversations. We do the show. If nothing else, we want to remind each other here that, you know, not everybody out there is nuts. You know, I get the opportunity to interact with people. And sometimes I interact it's been some time back. I had to go meet this guy. It's strange. I didn't know this guy, but I had to go meet this guy. Talk about some business. He didn't talk about some business. He's an old man. And we got talking. He wound up showing me his place. He had a place he's proud of, you know, some land and stuff. And we're just riding in his old truck, just visiting. And I thought to myself, you know, one does well to remember there's still decent people out here. There's still regular, normal people. Stay too plugged into the internet too long and too up on things. We all stay up on what's going on. We don't want to be ignorant. Nothing wrong with that. But just, you got to unplug from it. You got to unplug from it. Get out there. Talk to people. There's still decent people. The internet's the internet. Real life is real life. You know, the people on the internet, you know, especially with social media, it really encourages people. One of the things I really dislike about it, social media encourages people to be more and more over the top. for attention. It does. It's just going, you, if you're big on social media, if you get into, but I say big on social media, I mean you an e-celeb or something, but I mean, if you really get sucked into that social media thing, it will, because you see these women, for instance, on TikTok, and they all competing with each other. And they come up with more and more of the most ridiculous, over-the-top, nonsensical BS. And if you look at a bunch of that stuff, you're going to come to the conclusion that ain't none of them worth a nickel. And none of them may be worth a nickel. That's true. But they don't, that's not reality. That's TikTok. These are people trying to outdo each other for attention. They sick in the head. No, people get sick in the head with that. It becomes a disease. People doing self-destructive things for attention. I saw a deal just the other day. News story. You know, I went on some sketchy website. It's a news story. And some OnlyFans whore from... And I don't say that as an insult. I'm saying that is literally her profession. You know, she's getting paid for this. She, literally. So anyway, this OnlyFans whore, she's going to try to set the Guinness Book of World Records. Y'all probably saw this story. And I don't know what, she plans to have sex with, I don't know, over 100 dudes or 1,000 dudes or some ridiculous number of dudes in like 24 hours. See, sickness. If you're a woman and you're going to have sex with 100 or 1,000 dudes in 24 hours, you ain't going to be, well, you're already not normal because you're considering doing that. But at the other, if you do that, when you come out on the other end of that, you ain't going to be the same. It's going to break you. It'll break you mentally. It's going to break you spiritually. And something's got to tell a person like that, this isn't a good idea, you know? Got to have a voice in there somewhere going, maybe not. Hey, maybe this is a bad idea. But you see, she trying to up her image, her OnlyFans, her TikTok, or whatever. She got to one-up whoever else. If she does it, some other bitch will be like, well, I'm going to do 10,000. At some point in time, there's only so many minutes in a day. Unplugged from the craziness. We want to be a voice of sanity here. We're an island of refuge here at Radio Albion. We're an isle of refuge, an isle of sanity. Finally, we're still in listener-supported mailbag. See, y'all thought I done wandered off, and we were done with that. I got one more here. GPD, I think I know the answer, but I will ask, what do you think of capital punishment? I've heard lefties say it's not a deterrent, but seems to work well in Muslim countries where the condemned doesn't sit on death row for 30 years. That's from Mr. T. Good stuff. I'll answer that question. And it might surprise you. I don't know. I don't have a problem with the death penalty per se, because I got a addendum here to that. And by the way, if you get some noise in the background, it is like freezing here right now. And I started off with no heater. Yeah, I turned the heater off so there wouldn't be background noise. And I'm about freezing to death. So I had to turn the heater on. I usually edit that out of the background, but sometimes I didn't get all of it. So if you get a little bit of a buzzing in the background, that's what you're hearing. So just bear with me. Is that or I'm freezing, freezing to death. I don't have a problem with capital punishment per se. What I do have a problem with is capital punishment from this government. Does that make sense? The way to run a government, we've been given an outline in this. The laws, basically a lot of the laws handed out. I'm not just talking about the Ten Commandments. I'm not preaching early, but I just have, this is the answer, so. When you read the Old Testament, which not hardly anybody does anymore, there's a whole lot in there. There's a whole set of guidelines on how to run a government. That's what it is. People confound that and think those are rules. Just the one that everybody knows, an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth. And people are like, well, see, Jesus canceled that out because he started talking about turn the other cheek. One is a rule for how to run a government. You ain't going to run a government on turn the other cheek. Which, of course, nobody understands that either. I've gone over that so many times, I'm not doing it here. One is having talking about your individual behavior and your mindset. But the other is how you run a government. Anyway, if you actually read the Old Testament, there's this whole long, well drawn out framework of how justice is supposed to be meted out. And it makes sense. You were talking about it works well in Muslim countries. And sadly enough, because they're closer to those laws as outlined in the Old Testament, that's why it works better. Simple. Simple as. I mean, when I say I want a problem with the death penalty, that's because if I look in the Old Testament, and when you look through this myriad, there's a bunch of them in there. Like I say, we're not just talking 10 commandments. There's a whole deal about how to set up a justice system. And there's warnings. You were talking about people on death row for 30 years. There's warnings that if the government is slow to bring, to give the people the justice that they deserve, then the people will basically be tempted to take it into their own hands. It could cause them to sin because it's the state's job. You're supposed to be taking care of these judgments. Judges aren't supposed to be taking bribes. There's a whole system set up to assure that that happens in a timely manner. You know, if it's a sketchy situation, it might have been an accident, what we would maybe call manslaughter now, that person would go to what they would call like a sanctuary city. And that person would be protected there so that the person that maybe someone in their family died, but there's extenuating circumstances, that person just in a fit of rage couldn't go kill that person because then it's going to get messy. There's a whole set of rules. But there's nothing in there like, there's nothing in there about you can be thrown in jail under, for speech laws or something. When we talk about the death penalty under this system that we're under now, not the system outlined in the Bible. I mean, they put my friend in jail for, I still don't know what, I don't know. I mean, yes, I understand the charges, but I still understand what exactly, supposedly. I don't understand how a man can be, and this is my opinion. I am not speaking for Sven here because he has to, he's working in the system to make sure he doesn't reoffend and all of that. I'm speaking my opinion. My opinion. I don't know how the hell you get convicted and sent to prison and you don't have a single witness to say, yeah, I was a victim here. There's no victim here. They just basically can say, well, we can imagine there could have been. And you go to prison for that. You want a government like that carrying out the death penalty? No. No, and that, I'm using the UK there, but it's the same thing here. This is where I get into problems with it here in the US. Prosecutors, they don't care about the truth. They don't care if they get somebody convicted and sent up. They don't care if that person's innocent or not. Even if it's the death penalty, they don't care. They don't want to take an L on their resume. And there's documented cases of that. We hear these cases where somebody gets cleared with evidence that comes up later. I remember the story, and I've mentioned it before on the show, and it was years ago. They had a guy, and found out after the fact. His legal team, he had the lawyers that actually cared enough. Good luck with that. And they actually found exonerating evidence. There's been cases where it found out that the prosecutor had it all the time, and he hid it. By law, they're supposed to share it, but they didn't. They hid it. The prosecutor knew the whole time he was sending an innocent man up to death row. Didn't care. And the defense team presents this 100% exonerated, this guy is not the guy. And the prosecutor still fights it. still tries to keep him on death row because he doesn't want to have to put down a loss on his resume and make him look bad. He wants to run for judge later. This is where I have a problem with capital punishment. You see, there's nothing wrong with it in the correct context. This system, I do have a problem with it because I don't trust them. Would you? You get caught up in this system, you're screwed one way or the other. If you don't got money, you're screwed. All those arguments about whether or not it's a deterrence and humanitarian, blah, blah, blah. The problem is this. I don't trust this system. Capital punishment, they got no problem with that. But this system? These corrupt people, they didn't frame you up for anything. You trust them. I don't. Maybe you get lucky. Maybe if you get caught up in the system, may God forbid it. But if you get caught up in this system, you can be having to hope that maybe you got the one honest one who's going to look at it and go, yeah, no, this isn't the guy. But they can convict you for anything. They can indict you for anything. They indict you because it's a one-sided thing. They can go in there with just their side. You don't get nothing, no say in it. And then once they indict you, if it's a public deal enough, then they go around and, boy, parade it in the media. So you're guilty. That way they already got the jury with it in their head that you're guilty. They can run you through. They can plant evidence. They can do whatever the hell they want to. I don't know, man. The problem always comes back to this system. Problem ain't capital punishment. The problem is this system. I don't trust these people to do it. Now, we done with the listener supported mailbag. Thank you all. You know, one of the things I enjoy about the listener supported mailbag is the Christian specific segment. While I think it's the most important part, in a lot of ways, I don't struggle with it so much because all through the week, you know, I share stuff that I think about, you know, as I continue to struggle in my spiritual growth. The first part of the show, sometimes I struggle. I used to not because I'd always have something to talk about. But now that I'm doing two daily nationalists during the week, yeah, a lot of times I wind up talking about stuff that I would normally use in the first half of the show, and I struggle with that stuff. So one of the great things about the listener supporter mailbag is like today. It had never dawned on me to get into capital punishment today or talking about, you know, unplugging from the crazy, the internet and whatnot, and remembering that not everybody out there is a lunatic. It might not dawn on me to talk about those things. But see, y'all bring it up and it gives me something. You're making my life easier. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I'm going to get a little. I'm not going to get, we're not starting the Christian specific segment, but I have to get a little preachy here, but stick with me on here because we aren't starting it early. I do believe that our purpose here, the meaning in life, is to grow, understand, and understanding the world around us. This ultimately leads to understanding God. Those of you that are regular listeners, y'all know that. Now, I've talked about that multiple times. It's a regular theme here. I do. You understand the world around you. And by the world, I don't mean this crap that people have created, the clown world. I mean the literal creation of this world, the thing God has made, this planet that we live on, the plane of existence. There we go. This plane of existence that we live on. As you understand the creation, you understand God. And, you know, that's our goal. That's our mission in life, is to grow and understand him so that we're prepared for the next life. This is the prologue. This is the prequel. Everything here we're going through, this is all we know right now. This whole thing is a warm up. This is just the setup. This is just the preface of the book. This is just the introduction. This is the prologue, the preface. This is just the setup. The real thing starts later. Like I said, I'm not preaching early, but I want to set this up. But you get side quests in this life. You know, that's our main mission, but there's also side quests. You get side quests in this life. You know, like when you get older, you realize how much you know, this life is short. When you're young, it seemed like it's long. But when you get old, you realize how short it is. I've said this before. I'm in my late 50s now. And this means I'm in late autumn, early winter of my life. And there ain't no seasons after winter in your life. And, you know, if I live to be 20 more years, if I live another 20 years, that's nothing. And I would be in my late 70s then, and nobody would say he died so young. And 20 years ain't nothing. When you're my age, you realize 20 years ain't, that ain't crap. Anyway, when people get older, they start thinking about this. You think about it a lot. And if you're ill-prepared for that, you can have a tough time. People have a tough time with it because they're ill-prepared. You got to be ready. Be ready. Anyway. And you think about, well, when you're gone, you're gone. But this is where the side quests come in. It's kind of taking the long way around here. The side quests come in because there is a part of you that gets left behind. Your children, if you have grandchildren, you know, you're gone. You know, you go to a funeral. This is, you know, the Bible says, you know, wisdom is found in the house of mourning. So in other words, the house of mourning is generally referred to because when they had a funeral, it was in the house. They didn't have funeral homes back then. The house of mourning would generally be referring to somebody has died. And the finality of this life, and the temporal nature of it, how everything is temporary, you're going to find that there. Go to a funeral and you have a loved one that passes away. And you say, well, they're gone now. And they are from this existence. Once you're gone, you're gone. When you look around and this person who's passed away, their children are there. And their children have what? 50%. They're going to have half of that loved one, you know, their parents' DNA with them. You see, they left a piece of themselves behind. They're not completely gone. Because literally a part of them, because your DNA, you know, this is a huge part of what makes up who you are, right? And if you have half of this person who's now passed away, you have half of their DNA that makes up who you are, then there's literally, I mean, literally a part of them that lives on. Not just in some sort of feel good rhetoric. Literally, there's a part of them that's continuing on in this world. This is the problem. This is the problem I understand because, again, of the toxic nature of the world that we live in today. Y'all know me. I'm very sympathetic towards young. I ain't one of these old people like the young people spoiled. The young people got harder than I did at that age for the simple fact that they live in such a toxic world. Dating ain't even normal anymore. I don't even understand how you're supposed to go out with anybody now. The problem with it, because of the toxic nature of this world, is it becomes very tempting to just wash your hands of it, you know. People talk about, you know, men going their own way, and it's a very understandable thing. And I see people talking about this, and again, I'm sympathetic. I get it. And people are like, man, I'm done with these hoes. I'm just going to focus on making money, buying the stuff I want in life, and just go, I don't need the headache. You know, I don't need the headache. These women are all toxic. I would stop there for a moment and say, you know, a lot of what you're seeing, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about unplugging from the internet. You know, if you're judging every single thing, and they're bad now, I am not saying, oh, they're, you know, I'm not white knighting here in any way, shape, or form. But I'm also saying real life is not bitches on TikTok. You know, that's not reality. I mean, it's a certain segment of reality, people putting themselves out there like that. What I'm trying to get to is the problem with I'm washing my hands and I'm just going to go buy cars and live a lavish lifestyle. Read your book of Ecclesiastes. Even if you can read Ecclesiastes, get you a new international version so you don't struggle with the old English version. I mean, I do the King James version myself because, you know, I'm on a more advanced level. But you can read the new international version for Ecclesiastes. I've done it and it's okay. That particular translation of that particular book, the singular book there, is fine. I'm not saying to use it for everything else, but that one, it's okay. Read the book of Ecclesiastes, even if you're not a religious person, and it'll explain this to you, because that's exactly what the teacher does in the book of Ecclesiastes. He's a man going his own way. He does all of these things, and he spells it out. I went out and banged all these different hoes. I went and accumulated great wealth. I built palaces. I built estates. If they had cars, he had had all the cars, all the money, all the hoes. He had all of that stuff. And at the end of the day, he says it's vanity. Chasing after the wind. It's pointless. It's meaningless. What's the meaning to it? There is none. And that's the thing. Those things that people say, well, I'm just going to go chasing after these material things, these worldly things. They're empty. I'm going to warn you, heads up. The problem with that, that doesn't come without problems too. I know dealing with these, you've got to stay away from toxic people, and there's a lot of them. But the problem with just saying, well, I ain't even going to bother trying. I'm going to go chasing after these worldly things is those things are empty too. Those things are meaningless at the end of the day as well. One of the important side quests in this life is having children. If for no other reason, because you're going, that's what you're leaving behind. That's the part of you that will continue to have an influence in this world. Your DNA that makes up 50% of who that person is, that is the one thing you're leaving behind after you're gone. And if you just spend your life chasing empty things, and again, if you're able to do that, you will find they're empty. You see these internet, got unplugged from that. But you see these guys on the internet, and they talking about, man, I got money, and I'm living, people watching that. And they ain't got no money. And they see these guys by, man, I just stacking bank. And look, I'm having sex with just casual sex with all these hoes and buying cars and stuff. That if you do that long enough, you'll grow to hate it. You will. You'll grow to hate it because it's empty. It's meaningless. What is going to mean something? If you live to be old, full of years, and you on your deathbed, ain't no one going to roll your car in there and you look at pet that car. But if you can look at your children and your grandchildren, maybe even your great-grandchildren, you look and you know you're fixing to leave, but you're leaving something behind. There is a part of you you're leaving behind. So one of the side quests, our primary job here is to seek the Lord and grow, know to understand him so we're prepared for the next life. But our side quests, we do have side quests, and one of those is having to leaving some part of yourself behind. What if 3 generations from now, somebody who has a part of you in them, that part of you that's left behind, a part of your genetics, maybe that person does something great. Maybe that person, accomplishes something. He's becomes a great man. There's a little part of you that brought that back, because that person wouldn't exist without that. Whatever percentage of your DNA that's floating around in there, that person as they are wouldn't exist if not for you. You see, if you just unplug and chase, that's my problem with that. I understand the mindset. Don't get me wrong. But I'm telling you, the problem with that is it leads people astray into material things. It's the flip side. It's the way the devil did. I guess I kind of wound up being preachy a little early, but that's the way the devil does you. See, on the one side, he's got these women running out here acting like whores and being ridiculous, being a spectacle on the internet, up there bragging, where they do these people on the street interviews on the TikTok, and they're like, how many men have you slept with? And like, 874. And you're like, I want to know a part of that. But on the flip side, they'd help men. See, they're all whores. This is where the devil gets you. I'm telling you, him and his minions here on this world. Oh, see, they're all whores. You don't want to know a part of them. Just go out and indulge in materialism. They'll be gone someday. A meaningless thing. They got both sides chasing after a bunch of shit that don't matter. A bunch of meaningless garbage. that doesn't matter and wasting their lives. We're going to get a little preachy early. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. I'm having a moment here. We're going to run long today. Bear with me. It's going to be worth the wait. Let's keep on going. You know what to do. Get it in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. So this week, we're going to, instead of staying on a singular topic, I'm going to try to cover a couple of two or three different things. We'll just see kind of how long we spend on each thing. We'll see how many we get into. But one of the first things I thought we'd discuss is, as you go along and you understand, you know, the world, yourself, your role in it, and grow closer to the Lord, and you understand the nature of His creation, including time itself and how it flows, and it's the truly linear nature of it. Different parts of the Bible come together. You know, it all fits together like puzzle pieces. I mean, you look at a nugget or a verse or two from the Bible, and you're like, "Oh yeah, those are wise words." But as you come to understand other things, those pieces fit together, and you realize that it's much broader, has much broader meaning. For instance, and you know, it's written to be slow to speak, you know, slow to anger, you know, quick to listen. Well, you hear that, and it's like, well, yeah, that's good advice. You know, you don't want to be somebody that flies off the handle all the time, and you know, and runs off at the mouth without thinking first. But when you understand how time works, everything you do and everything you say is once it's out there, you can't undo it. Our words have power. I'm really wrapping my mind around the fact that our words hold power. I don't just mean, you know, when you say something to someone else and how it affects them and perhaps your relationship with them. I'm not talking about that. I mean, I believe our words hold a certain amount of power in our lives and in the way we view the world and the way we interact with the world and the way things happen, if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to do some kind of, you know, new age, you know, magic chanting nonsense. That's not, I don't mean that either. But our words have power, and it just makes sense. We're made in the image of God. And when God created the world and all that is in it, He created time. It says that, you know, first there was the Word. You know, He spoke. In other words, He spoke the world into existence. So it just stands to reason that if we're made in the image of God, then also our words, what we speak, has a certain amount of power. Now, obviously, you're not going to speak a world into existence. You don't have that kind of power. But if you're made in the image of God, your words do hold power. And I think it's important to, that's one of the things, just yet another one of the things we try to think about and understand in our spiritual growth as we go through this world. Our words have power. Our words hold power. And once you speak something, you can't unspeak it out of existence. When you come in to realize this and you're trying to wrap your mind around it and put these things into practice, it's difficult. But you realize how many people around you, how many people, the people you interact with, they use their words as though they're nothing. You know, they say things and just spew things out without even thinking, and they act as though they have no power. But when you become aware that your words have power, you're careful what you say. You're slow to speak. You like, be careful what you, if you think of it in terms of what you speak into existence. And again, I'm not saying, you know, you're magically creating other realities, but what you speak into existence. A good example of this is, you know, the narrative you have yourself. And I hope you have, you know, conversations in your mind, you know, narratives that you tell yourself. That's what I understand is normal. I read a deal sometime back, said there's a lot of people that don't have, there's a certain percentage of people have no inner dialogue, what they would call an inner dialogue, your thoughts, what you say to yourself. And I find that amazing. I can't imagine how somebody would be like that, because it just, you're literally like an NPC. But anyway, a good example of some of the power your words have is what you tell yourself. Would you, if you wake up every morning, before you go to your job, and the first thing you say to yourself every single day is, I hate this job. I don't want to go here. you know, it's that much harder, isn't it? Saying that, saying those words makes it that much more difficult. It makes your day start off basically on the wrong foot. You're speaking a certain amount of power, a certain perception into existence for yourself. You're making things hard before you even get started. Now, honestly, you know, and I think that kind of prevents you from, you know, budging. I don't know. It cements you into a position, it seems like, if that makes sense. And, you know, maybe there's a certain amount of power in that word, those words that keep you anchored to that job that you hate instead of just going, why am I doing this? And go find something to do that you don't hate so bad. You have a dangerous job. I remember when I was a kid, I see videos. I'd say whether we didn't have videos back then, but your newsreel, whatever, you'd see a show, you know, like a documentary. I would spit out, and you know, about those high steel workers, you know, and they build these skyscrapers, and those guys would be out there just walking on them beams. This was before they, you know, worried about all this safety stuff. Yeah, them guys be out there just walking around on those beams and handling stuff and welding them up, and they got a hard hat on. Guy out there standing out on a beam, I don't know, umpteen stories, cars and people down there looking like ants, and he got his hard hat on. What is that going to do? Like, oh, if you slipped and fell, be sure you land head first because you got your little hard hat on. It's going to make a huge difference. But you see these guys and they're walking those beams and they're doing that. I always thought that was just an amazing thing because I could never do that. I ain't doing heights like that. Hey, no way. You ain't not going to do it. But imagine if you were one of those guys and like every time you started the day and you got out there, it's time to start walking across them beams out there, you know, doing your thing, wearing your little hard hat. And before you did that, you'd say to yourself, today's the day I'm going to die. I'm going to fall off of here. I'm absolutely going to die today. That increases the odds of that becoming a reality. You start speaking that reality to yourself. You're dooming yourself before you even get the day started. You can tell those guys, you watch them. They ain't concerned about nothing. They ain't even thinking about that. That's not something going through their mind. They're just going about their business. Like, no, this is just another day at the office, another walk in the park. But if you started the day off thinking, I'm gonna slip off of this thing, I'm gonna misstep today, I'm gonna die. Even with this hard hat on, I might still die, even with a hard hat. And I'm not talking about just, you know, any of this, just, you know, the power of positive thinking. I mean, just be careful what you say. It's better to say nothing. You know, if the reality is unpleasant, then deal with that. I'm not saying say, you know, if your job really sucks, don't sit around and go, I love my job and lie to yourself. We're never supposed to lie to ourselves. But think about, okay, then what can I do different? It's time for a change of pace, a plan. You know, maybe you're stuck at a job because, you know, it pays good. It pays good and you got these bills. Well, then think about get these bills paid off so you can go to a job you don't hate that maybe doesn't pay quite as well. Point is, don't lock yourself in. Deal with reality. Deal with reality. Another good example of your words having power, you know, and being slow down. Because you say stuff when you're angry. You know, people don't... You know, what's wrong with being angry? You know, and there is such a thing as a righteous anger and a godly anger. Sinful anger, the problem, rather, with anger. Anger in itself is when you get mad, then you say things you don't mean. You know, like you and your lady or you and your, when you were young, teenager, you and your mom and dad get into a fight. That's when everybody winds up starting to say things they wish they hadn't said. And you can't reel them back. And people wind up holding that. You know, even if they say, oh, I forgive you. You know, if you get in a big fight with your old lady over the bills or whatever. And in the midst of this, y'all both mad. And she says, you know, you got a tiny pee-pee and you're the worst person I ever had sex with. I don't care if after that fight, she like, oh, you know, I was just mad. I didn't mean that. And you might be like, oh yeah, I understand. I said some things I shouldn't have too, baby. Yeah, and you ain't going to let that go. You ain't going to reel that back. It's been said. It's been spoken into existence because it's in that other person's mind now. You can't undo it. You can sit there and say, and you may really be sorry and wish you hadn't said whatever you said. And you may say, people say, oh, I take that back. You know, sometimes you say something, you know, you shouldn't say. And as soon as you say, I take that back. But you can't. It exists now. Not in time, because time is constantly flowing in one direction. It exists. You can't get rid of it. It sticks around because that person you said it to, it's in their mind. And you can't take it out. You can say, I'm sorry. You can say, I shouldn't have said that. I take it back. You can't take it back because it's in their mind. It's in their memories. And they're going to remember that. Even if they don't want to, they're going to remember that. You can't reel it back. You can't unsay it. You can't undo it. It's the best. Be careful what you say in the first place. This is why the Bible says, be slow to anger. Not telling you to be some happy-go-lucky, you know, automaton or something that puts up with a bunch of bullshit and doesn't get angry over it. Saying beware of being angry because you're going to be more likely to say something that you can't undo. And you're going to wish you had. By the way, this is the problem with drunkenness. People will sit there and say, well, there's nothing wrong with drinking. Jesus drank wine. And then others say, oh, no, the Bible's admonishing about drunkenness. And there's a difference. There's a difference. The problem with drunkenness isn't the drunkenness in and of itself. It's what? If you're drunk, you're more likely to say and do things that you wouldn't normally do. Simple as. If you're capable of having some drinks or maybe a few drinks with supper or just whatever, and not do that, it's not as much of a problem for you. The problem with it is you're going to be a lot more likely to say and do something that you ought not do. You know, there's many such cases. And again, you can't undo them. When you're young and wild, maybe you're older now and you remember back when you was wild and young and you go out and drink a whole way lot, you know. And then the next day, you'd have to go around and make that apology tour. Everybody that was with you is like, man, I know last night I made an ass out of myself. And I know I said some things and did this or that. There's the problem. And again, you can't undo those things. You can say, well, I was drunk. And everybody's like, yeah, but, you know, where did that come from? That must be what you really think of us. You can't undo it. Anyway, I've already spent more time on that than I intended to. I'm going to move on. But it is just something, you become mindful. Start thinking about your words, especially what you speak out loud. Because, you know, sometimes you're going to have stuff in your head. You're working through your stuff. But when it comes especially to what you speak out loud, get a mindset like you have a certain amount of power with what you speak into existence, with what you say. Start treating your words as though they're valuable. And I think you'll become a lot more mindful. As is my experience, you become a lot more mindful. You realize how careless people tend to be with their words. They just spout off and act as though it's nothing. And if you treat your words like they have no value, then it lessens value and the power that they have. I want to move on. I want to keep on talking. Another thing in the Bible that I've seen people. You know, have a problem with, or some people might would point to and say that it's kind of a contradiction. And one part is written that money is the answer to all things. And then, of course, we're all familiar with the New Testament admonishments about a man. You know, Jesus said a man cannot serve both God and money. And of course, how a rich man can't pass through, you know, it's like a camel passing through the eye of a needle for a rich man can get into the kingdom of God. And I was thinking about that. These are those things, one of those things, you know, money's the answer to all things. People, you know, a man cannot serve both God and money. I was thinking about this the other day in the context of the roles are reversed. It's not a, in other words, it's not a biblical contradiction. The problem becomes a role reversal. The Old Testament, you know, money is the answer to all things. Well, we know this. You can't sit there and say, oh, I don't need money, because you do. We all do. You know, if you want to eat, and you want to have a roof over your head, you know, you don't want to be out there in the freezing cold. You want to pay your electric bill so you got heat. You know, you got to have a car to get places. All these things you got to have. The only way you're going to get them is money. So money is the answer to these things, isn't it? And then people look at the New Testament and they're like, well, Jesus canceled that out. But no, he didn't. You still got to have money. You still got to have money today, babe. But he told that rich man, he said, sell everything you have. Give it to the poor. Take up your cross and follow me. Well, he was talking to that one individual person, and he was doing so to make a point. Role reversal. We'll bear down on that here in just a minute. And I think I can explain that, hopefully, what I mean by that. What Jesus was illustrating with this individual person. The problem becomes you get the wrong role. You know, it says in the New Testament, you know, a man cannot serve both God and money. You see, we're going to have fun looking at two sides of this coin. Money is supposed to be your servant. But that's not a problem. It's not. As long as money is your servant, things are fine. It doesn't matter how much money you got in the bank. As long as you're the master and the money is the servant. Now, the problem and the reason why in the New Testament particularly, it's admonishing about, you know, the problems with being the rich man, you know, why it's difficult for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God. The problem becomes the more money you have, the more likely it is to become your master, and you start serving it. Money is the answer to all things, not because it has a mystical power. Money isn't anything. We use these paper dollars, you know, today, or hardly anybody uses that anymore. They're just numbers on a computer. Check your account, use your debit card, whatever. They're nothing. It's nothing. I don't care what your bank balance is. If your bank balance is $2 million, that doesn't get you anything, does it? In and of itself. You'd be living on the street and have bank balance of $2 million, and that $2 million doesn't do anything for you until you spend it, right? You see, notice that. The money's useless. You can have a whole suitcase stacked full of $100 bills in there. Ain't going to keep you warm. Ain't going to feed you. You still starve to death with a suitcase full of $100 bills. The only use the money has, the only time the money becomes useful, is when you can exchange it for food, clothing, a house, pay your electric bill. And yet there's people who become servants. Have you ever known people? I remember when I was a kid, there was a guy in town, and he lived in a shack. This is like some kind of, you know, like some kind of backwoods folk tale. But there was a guy, and he lived in a shack. He was like a homeless person you would see today, except he had a home. It was a shack. He literally lived in this shack. He had a car. It was the most rundown, horrible looking car. This guy just looked like a bum, like a hobo. And the guy eventually died. And I remember the word around town. I was a little kid at the time. But I mean, I come to find out, this guy had a bunch of money. He had a bunch of money in the bank. And he living like a bum. He lived his life like a homeless person. Filthy, ratty old clothes, living in a shack. And he had all this money in the bank. You see, the money had become his master. He just knowing that money was in the bank, but it couldn't do nothing for him. He's serving it. He's going to get a few more in there by just eating half a can of beans tonight. Oops, don't need no washer and dryer. I just keep wearing these filthy clothes. comes a form of madness. Money is supposed to be your servant. As long as it's your servant, there's not a problem. Whether you got a lot or a little bit, not a problem. Again, the reason the admonition is there in the New Testament is because the more of it you got, the more likely it is it's going to get a hold of you. You know, you can do everything you can to hold on to it. Now, we're going to take this topic and treat it like a coin. We're going to kind of go back and forth with this. A man cannot serve both God and money. Money is supposed to be your servant. You're supposed to be its master. Let's flip this coin over then for a minute. We're going to set money on the other side, and we're going to look at the God side of it. Because it is so common to see, and this is the highlight, one of the key characteristics of this prosperity preaching you hear about, or these televangelical people that you see on the TV, and a lot of even prominent Protestant churches. They get the roles reversed on the other side of the coin. They act like God is their servant. You know, God's going to give me a new car. God's going to give me a pretty woman. God's going to give me lots of money. God's going to, got to. Who's the servant here? Who's the master? Money, flip the coin back over for just a sec, because we're comparing the two. Money is supposed to be your servant. It does, you use it for what you want it to do. God ain't that. You're the servant. Always remember that. You are the servant. God's going to do what he's going to do. And you have to have faith in him on that. Because sometimes you're going to be going through stuff you don't want to go through. It just is what it is. And you got to have faith that on the other side of that, you know, you're going to see some other things. This whole prosperity preacher thing, and it's a scam. It's just a money scam. It's disgusting. I've seen it. I've turned on the TV and seen these guys before. Years ago, I remember turning on TV, and I don't even remember who the preacher was. I really don't. But I'd seen one of these guys on TV. I'm sitting there listening to this guy. And like, I wasn't anywhere near spiritually mature as I am today, because obviously it was years ago. As the years go by, you get more spiritually mature. And even at that time, I was spiritually mature enough to sit there and scratch my head and go, well, this is a money scam. This guy was going on and on about the more money you send to God. Of course, God doesn't have an address, so you just go ahead and send it to him. The more money you send to the guy on TV, the more God is going to pay you back. Think about that. The more money you give me, the more money someone else is going to pay you. So see, you're not responsible for anything except accepting the money. If you got faith and give me everything you own, God's going to give you 10, 100 times more of that back. So if you got $10,000 of your life savings, it's like there's no different than those Indian scammers scamming old people out of their money. A lot of the people watching this are old people, and they're getting closer to death, and maybe they ain't spiritually grown like they should. They ain't put the work in like they should. So their faith is really weak, and they're having a hard time facing the fact that death is getting closer. But they've got a little money in the bank. Maybe they got $10,000. That's their whole life savings. And this guy is on TV telling them, well, if you give me that $10,000, you can do the math. If God gives you just 10 times that amount back, you can have $100,000 in the bank. It's a good investment. It's better than Wall Street. Better than get one of those CDs you get at the bank. Better than a savings account. And money ain't doing nothing for you. But if you give it to me, God's going to pay you back. God is not your servant. The whole thing, of course, on his face, you can tell it's a money scam. But looking at it further, it treats God like he's your servant. He's your ATM machine. Don't get the roles backwards. You serve God. That means when things are really good, you know, in your life, you're grateful to him and you understand he gives it. But you also understand in the back of your mind, he can take it away too. So when things are really bad in your life, you ain't all upset about it because you understand. It's just life. God ain't micromanaging your life. He is always the master. You're always the servant. You never forget it. You still just keep slogging forward with that mindset. It ain't his job. You know, he doesn't serve you. You serve him. You put in your work. You just make sure you're doing what you got to do. Are you working on your spiritual growth, seeking him, seeking the Holy Spirit? Take care of the things you got to take care of. Likewise, your money should be serving you. It doesn't do anything. It's just a piece of paper. It doesn't do anything till you exchange it. So you exchange it for something that you do want. That you want worth. It's kind of like, it's a funny thing. This is a little off subject, but it's something I find entertaining. You ever know people, and a lot of people are this way. I guess actually, if we're being honest, a lot of us are this way from time to time. But you know, you see somebody and they'll really just like obsess over getting a good deal. You know, and there's nothing wrong. You want to be intelligent. You want to be wise with how you spend your money. But you'll see people and they're just scared to death that they're going to spend too much for something. You know, they will agonize over something. For instance, is an example. You know, you'll see somebody and let's say they've got the money and they want a car. So they start looking at a new car and they're doing all their research and they're looking on the internet and they're looking at reviews and all these different things about this car. And they decide, this is the car I want. I really want this car. I would like to buy this car. And again, for our hypothetical, the person has the money for the car. Let's say the car, we're just going to pick a number. Say the car, they go down to the dealership. They look at the sticker price. They go on a Sunday so they don't get buzzard, you know, swooped on by the salespeople. And they look, and the sticker price on the car, $40,000. Okay, $40,000. And they got the money. We didn't say for our story here, this person has the money. It's not a matter of they can't really afford it. That's a different thing. They got the money, and they really want this car. But then they go home. And they start watching YouTube videos and reading more on the internet. And they find some guy on the internet that says, oh, if you're good at negotiating with a car dealer, you can get that $40,000 car for $25,000. And this sounds real to them. It's like you look at that and say, well, no, you're not. I mean, you might get them come down some, but they ain't going to come down that much. They ain't going to knock it off by half. But people start believing that shit, you know. And then they start going on forums and people are like, oh man, yeah, but you don't let them get you. Don't pay too much. And they just keep agonizing over it. And so they go finally they gain the courage. And they go down to the dealer and they sit down with the dealer. They test drive the car. Yeah, I want the car, you know. And they're haggling out price. And, of course, the dealer's playing their games. And at the end of the day, the dealer knocks a little off. They say, okay, I'd see the car for $38,000 plus tax, title, license, and, you know, a few of these paperwork fees or whatever crap they tack on there. And the guy says, okay, I'll do it. And he buys the car for $38,000. And that ain't the end of it. They'll go home. And then they go back on the internet and they agonize. Did I pay too much? And they're going to find somebody. Oh, man, they screwed you. They ripped you off. And it bothers them. They go to work and then people are like, that's a new car. You didn't pay too much, did you, man? I don't know, man. I hope they didn't get. Look, if it's worth it, we're just stick with our scenario. If it was worth the 30, if the car was worth more to you then the $38,000 that you gave them for it, then you got a good deal. Now, that guy you're talking to, he would rather have the $38,000. And that's where people get all crossed. You know, because there's other guys like, man, I wouldn't have paid that for that car. Yeah, because he didn't care nothing about the damn car. He wants a different car. Maybe he don't want a car at all. Maybe he's thinking in his head, man, I could have bought a really nice new boat for that and had some money left over. This guy's crazy. But you don't want no damn boat. You want that car. You see what I'm saying? In other words, it's a good deal for you because the $38,000, you would rather have the car than the $38,000. And this ties in with what I'm saying. Money is supposed to be your servant. You know, if the car is worth more to you than the 30, how if you pay the sticker price? It doesn't matter. Don't agonize over it because that car was worth more to you than the money. It's just money. It doesn't have any value until you spend it. I'm telling you, go out and blow it and be an idiot with it. But I mean, it doesn't have any inherent value in and of itself until you spend it. That car was worth more to you. You would rather have the car than the $38,000. Simple as. It's your preference. Don't worry about what everybody else says. Somebody, oh, but you co-worker, you buddy, oh, you paid too much. No, that's because he would rather have the money than the car. That's him. The money wasn't as worth as much to you. You would rather have that car. Does that make sense? And the reason I'm off on this tangent is because the point here is, this, the money's your servant. If you're going to sit there and do, you would rather have the car than the $38,000, but you're going to do without the car anyway, you're getting the roles screwed up. The money's just, it's your servant. That's it. It's not your friend's servant, your buddy. It's yours. The money you have, that's your servant. God is never, ever your servant. Ever. Always remember that. Remember this when you pray. When you're praying and you're asking the Lord, because you got problems, we all got problems. When you're asking the Lord for some, for help, for guidance, do it with the mindset that He don't have to do anything for you. You're the servant. You know, people, they go, the people that go pray to God and they, not even as half humble or respectful as if they're going to their boss asking for a day off. They go to their boss, like, boss, man, I need a day off. And let me explain to you. They praying to God and they acting like, God, I need this. I need. God is not, nor will He ever be, your servant. It's fine. You pray to the Lord. You're like, Lord, I don't know how to deal with it. I need some help. You know, I'm broke. I'm fixing to lose everything I got. Just remember, do it with a mindset that He's not your servant. If He doesn't do anything for you, that's fine because He's not your servant. He's the master. He does what according to His will. Always maintain that mindset. It's about having that proper mindset. And here's the thing. The older you get... Oh, before I move on to that. Never, when you're in a situation where you're praying to the Lord, always be mindful of these preconceptions of what that's going to look like. You know, God, please bless me with fill in the blank. You know, Lord, I really need fill in the blank. And you may really need it. And if you're taking care of the other things you need to take care of as far as fulfilling your role, you know, serving Him, trying to understand Him, trying to grow and seek Him earnestly. And you're doing those things, He may provide it. But I'm going to tell you, that preconception, that's idea you have in your head of how He should bring that about is probably not how it's going to come about. And it's probably not going to come about when you think it will. The older you get, you gain hindsight. You can look back. You will have parts of your life. Okay, you have parts of your life that are dark. I mean, that's just how life is. That's just life. You have parts of your life that are dark. You have parts of your life where you're in a hole and you don't see there's any way out. You're going to hit those times. You live long enough, you're going to hit those times. Those of you that are older, you know, you're sitting there nodding. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, you look back and those times passed. At the time, you couldn't see a way out or you thought you should come out of it a certain way. But you come out of it. And you get that benefit of hindsight. What I'm trying to say is you get that benefit of hindsight and you look about and you say, well, you know what? After all was said and done, I wound up in a better place. At the time, I couldn't see that. At the time, I just wanted God to bail me out of that situation. But now, some years go by and you look back and you're like, well, because I went through that situation, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, and ultimately, I wound up over here, which was a lot better situation than I could have asked for, but I had to go through all that. You understand? You get that benefit, and the point here is, it makes it more tolerable when you run into those rough times to have the benefit of that. If you're younger, you know, don't get blinded to the situation that you're in. It's temporary. Trust me, it is. It is. It's 100% temporary. Anyway, I'm getting way off track. We need to wrap up. Just always remember the role. Money serves you. You're its master. You're the one in charge of it. It doesn't run you. Always have that mindset. Oh, before we move on, because I said I was going to come back to it and I hadn't come back to it, I just realized. In the case where the rich man came to Jesus and said, what do I got to do to have eternal life? Because I said I was going to break that down and I just got rolling here and forgot all about it. In that particular case, Jesus was making a point. This man says, what do I got to do, master? What do I got to do to have eternal life? Imagine coming before Jesus in the flesh. And this guy obviously had some notion of who he was. He might not have fully understood it, but he knew he was somebody with authority because he went to him with the question. You wouldn't, if you had a question like that, you wouldn't go to your garbage man and say, garbage man, what do I got to do to have eternal life? No, you're going to go to somebody you think has the answer. So he obviously recognizes Jesus as an authority figure, as somebody who has some authority in this matter. Or maybe he's been standing back watching him heal people and make the blind see. So he goes to Jesus and he says, what do I got to do to have eternal life? And Jesus starts off with, well, you know, follow the laws and the prophets. And the man's proud. He says, master, I've done that since childhood. I've followed all the laws and all the prophets since childhood. And he wasn't lying. Jesus didn't tell him, you're a liar. He wasn't lying. He said, you know, Jesus starts off with the basics. Follow God's laws. You know, you got the prophets. You got the laws handed down with Moses. You follow those things. You know, do what you know what you're supposed to be doing. And the man's proud. He's like, master, I've done that since childhood. But see, Jesus already knew he had a different master, you see. You can't come to Jesus, you know, he already had a master. And this was the point he was making. This is why he told him, because he was making a point. Sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. And of course, the man went away immediately. He went away sad because he had a lot of money. Jesus was making a point that you can't serve two masters. He already had a master. The money had become master over him. If money was not his master, if he had not become a servant to money, it wouldn't matter how much he had. Jesus wouldn't have made that point. Because Jesus was making that point because he already knew, is what I'm saying. You already have a master. You have let money become your master. And so it was. He came face to face with Jesus, and Jesus tells him, you can have eternal life if you just sell everything you have, get rid of all of your money, and follow me. Eternal life. Now that guy, because this wasn't a parable, this was an actual interaction, this was an actual human being. That guy has been dead now for centuries. His money is long gone. All that wealth, he couldn't give it up because it became his master. That's long gone. No, it doesn't exist anymore. If he would have been master over the money, so he wouldn't have been in that position. But because money had become his master and he became servitude to money, he sold off, he gave up on the chance for eternal life, something that lasts, for wealth that's been gone for centuries. You know, that's a poor deal. People read that, and the reason I want to go through that real quick is because people read stuff like that, they misinterpret it, and they think Jesus says, well, if you're poor, it inherently makes you a good person. No, if you're an asshole, you can be an asshole whether you're poor or rich. Just being poor doesn't, in and of itself, make you a good person. They read that and be like, man, see, I ain't got that guy's problem. I ain't got that guy's problem. I ain't got no money. Jesus was making a point. And again, the point he was making is you're supposed to be the master over the money. But God is always your master. Money's your servant. You are God's servant. Everything in its proper role. We got to wrap up on that note. I know we're going a little long here. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you got something out of it. Appreciate you joining me this week. And hopefully I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.